Today's date is January 19, 2010. We're at the Amelia Island Museum of History. The following interview is being conducted as part of the Amelia Island Museum of History's Veterans History Project in partnership with the Library of Congress. We are interviewing Richard J. Henry, date of birth, September 27, 1920, place of birth, Albany, New York. My name is Robert Hamer, and I will interview Mr. Henry on behalf of the Amelia Island Museum of History. Also attending this morning is June Henry, Richard's wife. Assisting me is Don Hill, who will operate the recording equipment. During the course of the interview, we'll be discussing the following subjects. What was your period of service? During which conflicts did you serve? What was your rank? And where did you serve? But first, let's start, Dick, with you telling us what was your motivation for enlisting in the Navy back in June 1939?
Well, I'm a child of the Depression area in that area. I was 9 years old when this crashed.
Mm-hmm.
And we needed things to do. Make money and whatnot. Public school in Rensselaer and Albany was they had a trade school in Albany, and I went to that. It was Philip Schuyler.
Gotcha. Did you have your father or any uncles in the military at that time?
My father was in World War One, and he went to Camp Devens in Massachusetts. His younger brother, Tom, went to Germany.
Mm-hmm.
Was over there for a number of years.
Was that part of your inspiration for enlisting?
That brought me to the Citizens Military Training Corps.
Oh, okay.
And that was a trip by train from Albany to Plattsburgh, New York.
Mm-hmm.
And a month up there in the squad tent with the rifle and drilling and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
That made me seriously consider the Navy.
Gotcha.
I didn't like the sand and fleas and carrying that pack around.
Sure, sure.
So as soon as that period of time was over, I went to a recruiting station in Albany and they come up with the story that I had to lose some weight, gain some height, and wait 2 years before I could get in.
You made your weight.
It was a two-year waiting period. It was the normal at that time.
Okay.
So we went through that. I did gain a little height and lost some weight. And one day they showed up at the door in a gray sedan.
Mm-hmm.
Says, how would you like to leave right now?
Wow.
And I says, I'm ready.
Good for you. How old were you? Approximately how old were you at that time, Dick?
I was 19.
19. So you went into 19, you enlisted.
The Citizens Military Training Corps, that was 16 or 17, you had to be on that.
Mm-hmm.
And that you spent 4 years, a month for each year for 4 years. First year was infantry. The next year they had me signed up for coastal artillery.
Mm-hmm.
But I preferred the Navy.
Gotcha.
And wound up, when they came over with the sedan, I left.
Good, good. So where did you go to basic training? Where
the recruiting station in Albany sent us to Newport, Rhode Island.
Okay.
And there we were in Barracks B, which was the newer barracks. And drilling at that time was a lot different than it is today, I'm sure of that.
Mm-hmm.
You lined up in the drill hall, took off all your clothes, and you run through the showers.
Oh, wow. There.
And you slept in a hammock, and everything was in a sea bag.
Oh, okay.
And you spent days packing sea bags and rolling clothes.
Mm-hmm.
We had to row a whaleboat, and we had to have a marksman's
qualification.
Marksman with the Springfield rifle.
Okay.
You had to prove yourself proficient in that before you could complete training.
Sure.
And you also had to swim for a certain amount of distance before you could complete training.
Sure. That sounds very Navy, by the way. the hammock and the swimming and all that kind of thing, as compared to the Army and all that. Yeah. So how long are you in basic training? Was it 6 weeks, 8 weeks?
Boot camp was 3 months.
3 months, oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. And what about your advanced training after that? Did you go somewhere for that?
Yeah, it went right to the ship, the Helena.
The Helena was your assigned ship.
That ship.
And what was your expertise when you went on board the ship? What did you? What was your specialty?
It was a donkey.
Okay, and that is what?
Everything they wanted to do, you did.
All-purpose
sailor.
You were
a seaman second and whatnot. So you had mess cook and you had the normal routine of a deckhand.
Okay. And what did those duties entail? You would keep things clean and organized on board the ship?
Polished brass, you scrub paint work, you scrub the deck with holy stone and sand.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure they're not doing that today either.
Right, right. Now, where was the Helena stationed at the time? Where were you?
It was put in commission in September of 39 in Brooklyn.
Brooklyn.
And we took it on a shakedown cruise. Went to Buenos Aires.
Mm-hmm.
And on the way down, the Von Tirpitz and... the Graf Spee. The Graf Spee was on there with the three English cruisers.
Okay.
They were playing tag out in the Atlantic at that time,
mm-hmm.
and we could hear them on the radio, and we were in close vicinity to them, but not within sight.
Mm-hmm.
But when we got to Buenos Aires and completed that period of time down there, the meat companies, the Armor or Swift or whoever, they sent a bus into the ship,
mm-hmm.
picked us up and took us out and gave us a barbecue out in near ranches that area with the gaucho cowboy types.
Oh, really? Okay.
And they treated us pretty well. And then the next stop was the Montevideo, and that's where the Graf Spee was scuttled. And we could see the superstructure sitting in the water there.
Mm.
And when we went on Liberty in that town, we were making Liberty with the German sailors, trying to swap hat bands with them, but they wouldn't go for it.
No kidding, wow.
They didn't want to come back home without their hat bands on.
And this is 1940 timeline, 39, 40?
39, yeah.
Still 39, okay. Mm-hmm. Good.
And let's see, then we stopped up in Brazil. And when we got back to New York, before we could come into New York, we had to dump all the meat we picked up in Argentina because you couldn't bring it into the country at that time.
Yeah. Yeah.
So then we spent quite a bit of time in New York on training exercises and whatnot. And then we got transferred to the West Coast.
Mm-hmm.
We had the World's Fair in 39 here in New York City.
Mm-hmm.
We saw that one, but we missed the West Coast World's Fair. We went to Los Angeles before we went to Pearl.
Mm-hmm.
And we got to Pearl, it was nothing but drills and whatnot.
Mm-hmm. And what was your rank at this time?
Third class at that time.
Seaman third class?
When we got there, yeah.
Good. And at this point, did you pick up any specialty at all? Did you start to go to a certain area of the ship?
Then I was in the fire control group, and we were controlling all the offensive weapons on the ship.
Wow.
It was the fire controlman's job.
Right, right.
Was taking the range to the target, run it through the computer, and coming up with where that ship would be when the bullet got there, hopefully.
Oh, wow. Wow. So, now, in those days, when they did target firing, did they have targets that were like some length behind another ship that was like towing a target?
The Utah was the target ship.
Okay.
And they towed a sled behind the ship.
Mm-hmm.
And we would fire at that. We'd have offset binoculars to look at it so that we would be looking at the battleship Utah,
mm-hmm.
but we'd be firing some degrees behind it.
Gotcha.
with the, but hopefully the shells would get there.
Sure. So the goal was to zero in on the boat that was the target boat. You'd be
picking your spot on the ship, but the bullets would be landing behind the ship on the sled.
Gotcha. Thanks for explaining
that.
And
that's where they would measure the splash to see where.
Oh.
How far off you were.
Very good. Very good. Now, you mentioned Pearl. You're now assigned, the boat is assigned to Pearl Harbor at this point?
Pearl Harbor, that come up at that time, yeah.
Hmm. And again, timeline 1940 yet? Are we there?
1941.
1941, you were there.
We spent a lot of time running around in the Pacific with drills and whatnot.
Mm-hmm. The way the Hollywood depicts Pearl Harbor when they show it, there were a lot of drills there to the point where you almost didn't believe anything anymore. Does that ring a bell?
We were praying for them to start something, really.
Okay, yeah.
It had gone on that long. You'd been drill action and drill action all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And it got monotonous and whatnot.
So tell us a little bit, Dick. Tell us about the morning of December 7th.
Well, on December 7th, I was in a very good position. I had watched the night before, and I got up and got the Sunday paper, went to my normal cleaning station, which was the forward battle control station,
mm-hmm.
And the main battery. And before I could read the paper, the action started,
mm-hmm.
and I've read in some of the accounts that we were possibly one of the first ship to get torpedoed.
Mm.
I can't swear to that, but
yeah.
That was, and we had the Ogallala tied outboard of us. The Ogallala was a wooden mine layer,
mm-hmm.
and the torpedo went under it and into our engine room,
mm-hmm.
and demolished the Ogallala. And me being in the main battery department, we didn't get to fire anything. We just sat there and got pummeled.
Oh, wow.
So that was not an enjoyable time.
Hmm.
For a week or 2 weeks after that, anybody that moved on the beach area, there would be a bunch of rifle fire and whatnot, or a plane come in, there'd be somebody shooting an aircraft at him.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it was ours or theirs, it didn't make any difference.
Everybody was a little punchy. If we could, let's go back to the morning. After the boat was hit, what was your activity? What is it that you did?
I was working on the main battery guns, which didn't get to fire.
Right.
Only the aircraft guns fired.
Did
so we just sat there and took it.
Took it. But once you were hit, there was a situation where, you know, there was fire and confusion. And
there was,
tell
there
us.
There wasn't confusion in the spot I was in.
Okay.
The confusion was down in the boiler room and the living compartments down below decks.
Right.
That's where all the action took place.
Yeah, yeah.
But I missed out on all that.
Okay, well, it's a good thing to it. You missed out on all that, I guess, you know. So the boat was destroyed so much, it wasn't seaworthy at this point, I take it.
It couldn't get underway.
Right.
And there wasn't much that could get underway at that time.
Right, right, right.
So the battleships were across the channel from us. I have a map of the area here if you want to
sure.
pick that up later.
Take a look at that, yeah, later on.
There was the water in the channel was black with oil and
mm-hmm.
burning, and bodies were in it, and there were people rescuing them.
Mm-hmm.
But our function was to stay on the ship. The captain said, stay there,
mm-hmm.
and that was it.
Okay.
Our anti-aircraft guns were working.
Right.
And it's just being in the main battery, I didn't have anything to do.
It's okay, yeah. Did you, after the battle, the attack, how many men did we lose on board your ship? Do you recall?
I don't recall a number on that. I wouldn't give you an estimate.
Okay. So
it was, we had some fire controlmen that got machine gun fire on the upper decks, and they wound up in the hospital.
Mm-hmm.
There was people that were burnt. The number 24 comes to mind, but I wouldn't swear to it.
Okay. Okay. So after the attack and
things,
the Navy started
about 2 days or 3 days before things got anywhere near normal.
Right.
The water was still coated with oil,
mm-hmm.
and I don't know if they're still picking bodies or not.
Mm-hmm.
But the smell of that burning body and that oil burning, it made people sick. It made me sick. I couldn't go into the hospital for years after that without getting upset.
Sure. Sure, seeing all that, absolutely. And as you mentioned earlier, everybody was on edge, right?
All
that, if, with the plane or anybody on, unidentified along the beach, you were prepared to shoot a fire or, you know, set up perimeters for protection, right?
Well, there was a fellow, Commander, what was his name? The guy, he lived on Regina and Sunrise. Commander Hollowell, he was on the ward, and they actually sunk a submarine before the aircraft got in. The aircraft were about an hour away when their ship sunk the submarine in the channel mouth.
Okay. Wow. So the boat, how did they repair your boat? Did they take it away from Pearl? Did they send it off somewhere?
We had to get a patch put on the side of the ship. It was about 30 foot by 6 foot, I think, mm-hmm. the hole that the torpedo made, and it put our engine room out of commission.
Mm-hmm.
So we got a patch that was welded onto the outside skin,
mm-hmm.
and we went back to the States slowly,
mm-hmm.
and on one engine or two engines, whatever they had down there.
Mm-hmm. And what port did you go to?
We went to Vallejo.
Vallejo, so that would be out by...
that was the...
Treasure Island in that area there, in San Francisco?
That was... Vallejo was the Navy Yard.
That's okay. I think it's on the West Coast, right near San Francisco.
It's on the West Coast. North of San Francisco.
Yeah. Good, good. Let's just... Okay, so you were under one engine or two. You were able to get to the West Coast of the United States.
The West Coast, yes.
And what shipyard?
To the Bremerton Navy Yard, and we stayed there. As soon as we got in there, they started working on the ship,
mm-hmm.
and they broke up the crew of that ship mm-hmm. and sent them to where we were now experienced sailors.
Okay.
So they sent us to other ships.
Gotcha.
And my assignment was to go to fire control school in Washington, D.C. in the Navy Yard.
Okay.
And from there to the Massachusetts.
Oh, okay. And
that's
what kind of a
got on that one.
What kind of a ship was the Massachusetts?
Massachusetts was a battleship. And that was put in commission in Boston, Massachusetts. And I was on there for the commissioning of that ship also.
Okay, and what was your duty on board that ship?
Then I was a fire controlman second on that ship.
Okay, great.
And they had sent me to school after I got on the Massachusetts to Norfolk to radar operator school at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And on the Massachusetts was the first time that we had radar on for fire control on the ship.
No kidding. Really?
And we went from Boston to Portland, Maine for Christmas, and we were installing that damn radar in that environment, and Western Electric sent us an engineer to work with us, and that bugger was colorblind.
Oh, God.
So it was a hell of a mess. But we left there, and the ship got Massachusetts got not field test. We had not shakedown.
Sea test.
Sea trials, maybe.
Sea trials. That's it. Thank you. We did that up in the cold water of Maine,
mm-hmm.
so they get better results that way.
Gotcha.
As soon as the sea trials were over, and the time had progressed to where the invasion of North Africa was coming up, and the Massachusetts was the flagship for that operation, and we got over to Casablanca. On the way over, almost every night, Commander Duke was our gunnery officer.
Mm-hmm.
He would tell us, go down to the turret, change the elevation inclinometer to a given degree.
Mm-hmm.
And all the way over, we heard that it was a 15-inch gun that they had. And he was changing the barrels to get a pattern that he wanted.
Mm-hmm.
So when we got to Casablanca, they said it was a 15.9-inch gun that the Jean Bart had. It was a French ship, battleship, Jean Bart.
Okay.
Was tied up in Casablanca, and they were throwing 15.9-inch shells at us, and we were throwing 16-inch at them.
Wow.
And the Massachusetts fired, I would guess, 600 rounds, and a lot of them were duds.
Uh-huh.
And that ship, we heard it was written up in the German newspapers that the new pocket battleship of the U.S. was on the African coast. And we had to get destroyers to get out of our way because we were going so fast.
Wow.
They liked the idea of that. But we sunk the Jean Bart,
mm-hmm.
and we sunk two destroyers, at least. And the shore batteries were down there. And we had to make a run from Casablanca to Fidela,
mm-hmm.
where the operation, the landing operation was going in on that area, got in some trouble, and they says come up in a hurry.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And that's why we had telecans get out of the way so we could maneuver.
Sure.
But that ship turned in a performance that day. The Jean Bart had us triangulated from El Hank Light and Casablanca where they were. They had us right to the inch, but they had a big pattern, and they were throwing two over and three under, and we didn't do that. They were all in a row, and they were close, and we clobbered that ship, and the destroyers, we actually split one. The shells were that close.
Wow. So it was your technique at the time.
That was the way that Commander Duke set that inclination compensators so that he had the pattern that he wanted, and
sure.
he got a good one.
Good.
It worked great.
Good. So then what happened after that? What did the Massachusetts do?
We come back to the States, and we pulled into Annapolis, and they brought up a barge. And we took off all the 16-inch we had and sent it back to the gun factory.
Wow.
And went down to Norfolk and got a fresh batch.
Oh, okay.
We had a little leave and recreation time then. And we left there, went through the canal, which was a tight fit, and went to Noumea, New Caledonia.
Mm-hmm.
There we started out, come up into the Coral Sea and island hopping up through the Marshalls and the Gilberts and mm-hmm. all those Pacific islands. That was mostly shore bombardment, but of course we did have aircraft action against us.
Mm-hmm.
But I was basically running the main battery on the Massachusetts as well as the Helena.
Good for you. That's great. That's great. That's
about it.
Okay, so Dick, you're on the Massachusetts, and after the Massachusetts, what was your next assignment?
The next assignment was the USS Norton Sound, AV 11.
Okay, and at this point, World War II had wound down?
The Navy had run down on the number of ships they had, and the Norton Sound just come back from the atomic test at Aniwetok.
Oh, really? Wow.
And I took it up to Thule, Greenland.
Great.
And up there, we leveled out a spot for a radar station on top of Greenland, and that was the reason for going up there.
When you left, when you left the Massachusetts, did the Navy offer you the opportunity to leave the military at that time? Is that when you made a decision to make it a career?
No, the first time I had 4 years in, it was probably on the Massachusetts at that time.
Mm-hmm.
But you couldn't get out at that time.
Okay.
They were holding everybody in.
Okay.
So before I could get out the first time, I had 8 years in.
Right.
So that wasn't practical.
Right. Did they have a point system to allow the sailors to get out? Or was there any system like that?
I assume they did. I didn't keep track of my points.
But you
didn't
qualify.
I knew I was staying.
Yeah. Just one other question before we go forward again. Do you recall where you were when you heard the war was over? I mean, that's a big event. You know, were you on the Massachusetts or?
I don't know. When the hell did I get on the,
Okay.
Couldn't tell you.
Do you recall hearing about the surrender on board the ship?
That was come in by radio. Everybody knew that.
Yeah.
We had, VE Day, and then they had VJ Day, and VJ Day I was, must have been on Massachusetts.
Okay, I just wanted to ask, it might have been a special thought for you there, but, so, okay, you reassigned, you stayed in the Navy, and you were on?
We got on the Norton Sound, and went to Thule, Greenland, and up there they had, one PBM.
PBM
was a patrol bomber made by Mars.
Gotcha, thank you.
And we had one scout plane. And the reason for going there, as far as I know, was to get the areas flattened out so that the planes could land and bring their radar station in and set it up in Thule.
Gotcha.
And Thule was nothing but a few wooden huts or wooden houses. And they had one little general store and a bunch of Eskimos. And the Eskimos were still living in igloos. But they did have a church that the Danish people built there. And in the church, they had a image of Jesus on the wall, and he was painted like an Eskimo.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was unique.
Yeah.
But that and running around on top of a glacier, that was the highlight of the trip.
Gotcha.
Two fellows did fall into the water up there. One guy was in for 3 minutes, and one guy was in for 5 minutes. The five-minute guy went back in the PBM in a plywood box.
Mm. Yeah. How cool it was. Wow. Did you have any special friends, any buddies that you hung out with during this time frame? Anybody that you
Not on that ship.
Not on that ship. Okay. All right. Any chief or officer that was sort of a role model to you? Anybody that really looked out for you or the rest of the men?
I think it was just do your duty and you made out all right.
Yeah.
You took a test and you passed the test and went up the next grade and you did your work and you kept going. That was it.
Mm-hmm. And what was your rank at this time?
On the Norton Sound, I believe I was Chief Petty Officer. Then.
Chief Petty Officer. Congratulations. That's great. Mm-hmm. How about food and mail? It was difficult, different kinds of food now where you were stationed?
I didn't get much mail.
Okay, no mail. No much mail. All right.
Food, I enjoyed the food. The Navy had good food.
Good. All right, so what was next?
After the Norton Sound, we went to the Missouri. And the Missouri was a battleship, 16-inch guns. And that, we went to, I'll say we went down to Rio, and we had a shellback ceremony going down to Rio. And we picked up President Truman down there, and he was down there for Organization of American States. And we picked him up and brought him home.
Great.
And he came down to the chief's quarters and had a couple, three meals with us.
Great.
And we'd see him walking around on the ship, and he would come up to the main battery director, and he'd look over the side and say, look at that bugger, look down there looking for me. But he had colorful language.
Yes.
He was a good guy.
Good.
Enjoyed him.
Do you recall what year this was, approximately?
That was in 46.
Great. Very good. And so you were off next to where?
The Missouri brought us back to the Providence. And the Providence, we picked that up in Boston.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a 6-inch cruiser, light cruiser.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a Mediterranean trip. You'd get down to Gitmo for 6 weeks, and you'd hold gunnery drills down there, come back to Norfolk or Boston, one or the other, and head for the Mediterranean for a 9-month cruise, come back and do it all over again.
Mm-hmm.
Was about 4 or 5 of them mid cruises were on that ship. But that one, there was nothing spectacular in that. That was just you go wandering around the Mediterranean, same thing all the time.
Yeah. Yeah, and at this point, you knew it. You've been in for at least 10 years, so you knew that you were gonna stay for make a career out of it.
I knew day one I was gonna
stay. Okay, that was your goal. Sure,
that wasn't a problem with me. Food was not a problem, and Navy was not a problem.
Good for you. Can I ask you? At this point, you said you were chief. Was there any kind of initiation process when you make chief? Do they have any kind of a symbolic ceremony or anything like that?
I made chief down in school in Washington, the gun factory.
Mm-hmm.
That's where we actually made chief. And the waitress in the farmhouse on 8th Street, she peed in a hat. That was the ceremony.
Yeah. Okay. They started to ask if there was something special, because that's a big deal. That's a very important rank in the Navy, being chief.
We didn't have a big deal on that because you got that in Washington while you were at school, and then you went to another ship from there.
Gotcha. Okay, so what was next?
Next, we went to the Atlantic Reserve Fleet in Bayonne, New Jersey.
Mm-hmm.
And that was all mothballed.
Oh.
And we lived on a carrier. Was a Crow 10. I don't know what number it was now. I don't know. It was a light Jeep carrier, we call them at that time.
Okay.
That was nothing but housing for the crew that was working there. and you maintained all the ships that were in there.
Mm-hmm.
There was carriers, and the Alaska and the Guam was in there. They were both heavy cruisers.
Mm-hmm.
You had to maintain the dehumidifiers, and whatever ordults would come in, we would have to apply them as we got them,
mm-hmm.
and inventory their spare parts, whatnot, keep them up to snuff. And then every once in a while, we'd take a ship over to Brooklyn, and we took the carrier Enterprise over to Brooklyn.
Really?
I think it was an Enterprise. I wouldn't swear to what name it was.
Okay.
That went in for a major refit type mm-hmm. deal. And we was over there for several months on that ship.
Was this good duty at the time?
Yeah, was that it was choice duty. That
okay.
was Bayonne was right across the bay from New York City.
Yeah, so you had time
and
off.
We had a bridge to Staten Island.
Yeah.
So we had every place we wanted to go was there.
Good, good.
It was good duty.
Good. And what about after that? What'd you do after that?
After that one, we got married on that assignment. Mm. And went to the English. Now we got married on the English. October of 51 to 54. Was on the USS English, was DD-696. And we picked that up in Norfolk. And that did nothing but make med cruises. There was nothing spectacular on that ship, except we got our nose chopped off one night in the Atlantic doing exercises with a carrier.
Oh, wow.
Woke up one morning and looked out, and I could see the daylight, and that wasn't right.
Right.
We lost about some feet of nose on that ship.
Wow. Lose any men? Anybody perish?
No, I don't think anybody got hurt on that because it was the paint locker and the chain locker and that type of thing. It was strictly bump.
Wow.
But that guy bumped hard.
Do you remember what carrier it was that you hit?
No, I can't tell you that.
It doesn't matter, yeah. Okay, so that was 1954.
After that one, we went to the USS Yellowstone.
Hmm.
That was AD 27. That one was med cruise. one big med cruise was on that one. That's it.
Okay. Still doing basically the same functions on board the ship? Same duty?
That one... we were repairing destroyers as they had problems. And I did get to go on one English ship, had a radar problem, and they called over for help, and we did one job on an English ship.
Okay.
I don't remember what the name of that one
was.
Yeah,
that's fine. I was just wondering, so it was still good duty. You liked what you were doing. What was your, did your rank change? Did you have any
promotion? No, I was still chief.
Chief.
That was it.
Okay. Good. And what was next?
Then I got out of the Navy on that and went to Naval Air Rocket Test Station was from the Yellowstone.
Mm-hmm.
And that was in Dover, New Jersey.
Okay.
And that was in 56. I did the last 2 years up there. And that was a neat place to work. We were out in the boonies. We were firing rocket engines.
Hmm.
We were disturbing the neighbors. they did the... rocket engine that wound up being the X-15 was tested from the X-2 on up.
Really?
Was across the street in Reaction Motors was the name of the commercial company that had that motor contract.
Yeah.
But we were there while it was being tested. And we did some of the missiles, and we did the guidance... steering engines for the shuttle and capsules.
Space capsules.
And other rocket type engines, and fuel evaluation was what their big deal was.
Gotcha. Yeah.
And I got out of the Navy on that one.
You got out of the Navy on that one. So what was your...
Retired out of the Navy from Brooklyn.
Good. Very good. Yeah. Before we leave your Navy career, your 20-year Navy career, did you incur any kind of injury or illness or anything that you might want to talk about?
The illness I had was the hepatitis, and it was obtained by eating anise plants in Italy.
Oh, wow.
And it showed up on the way back. I couldn't stand anything on my stomach. They diagnosed it as hepatitis. He went to the hospital in Newport and was in there for 2 months with nothing but boiled food.
Wow.
And rest. That was their cure, but it worked.
Good. Now, and again, before we go forward, was there anybody in your 20-year career that treated you special, any friends of friends?
Well, one of the best friends I had in the Navy was Alexander Richard Reed Blake, and he was from Springfield, Massachusetts.
Mm-hmm.
And we went through training together, and we went through all our time on the Helena together.
Mm-hmm.
And he was, his parents would take me out of the training station the same time they'd take him out, and we had a good time together.
Okay.
And he was a good shipmate.
Did you stay in touch with him or his family through the years?
Only when we'd meet each other on different Navy bases, whatnot.
Good.
So we run into each other quite often.
Good. That's great. Okay, so you left. You were discharged. What did you do? Did you go to school? Did you go to work?
I went to work.
Where'd you go to work?
I went to Brooklyn and took an exam for instrument technician for the Navy.
Okay.
The Air Rocket Test Station, I was an instrument technician there.
Mm-hmm.
On the engines, and so I kept the same toolbox and the same workbench, and come back a week later as a civilian.
What was the name of the company that you worked for? Do you recall?
No, it was Naval Air Rocket Test Station.
That's what that was. Okay. Yeah. Okay. And how long did you do that?
I did 18 years there.
18 years there. Wow. Good for you.
It was absorbed by Picatinny Arsenal. But the little test area that I was working in was a good rocket engine factory.
Mm-hmm. Did you do pretty much the same thing for the 18 years, or did you progress into different departments? Or?
It was basically the same task. Mm-hmm. You had to measure the chamber pressure and the tank pressures on the rocket engine as you fire them to get the proper burn period and get the thrust out of them.
Mm-hmm.
And what I was doing was measuring that parameters, and we had old L&N recorders when we started there, and I went to school in Fort Lauderdale in a company called Systems Engineering Lab, and they built a big computer that took the magnetic tape, the IBM machine, and recorded many thousands of readings, much better than what we were doing before.
Wow. Okay.
So that was on that. They took that computer and sent it to Huntsville and did away with that base and absorbed us into Environmental Protection Agency.
Oh, really?
That's when I left.
Interesting. Yeah, that's a big change. So what did you do after that?
That was it.
That was it. You retired.
I retired and went to Florida.
Went to Florida. Okay. Where in Florida did you go to?
We had a place on a place called Arapica.
Is that on the west coast of Florida?
On the west coast, on the boundary between Pasco and Hernando counties. And we wound up buying three houses over there. And we were commuting from Jersey and Pennsylvania down to Florida for recreation vacation types.
Sure.
And when Governor Byrne put the income tax in New Jersey and exempted all the high state officials, I says, I'm becoming a resident of Florida.
There you go.
And come down.
Good. And what timeline was this approximately?
76.
76. Good. So you were over there in the West Coast for how long did you, the West Coast of Florida?
Till 89.
And what brought you to Nassau County and Amelia Island?
Mrs. Henry did not like the cookie cutter houses in the, on the West Coast of Florida.
Okay. We know who the boss is.
She didn't like Cinder Block Village.
Okay.
So she used to send me on trips when I would come down. The dog Henry and I would come down, and she'd say, go to Edenton and look at this house. Go to Carolina Beach and see what it looks like there. She didn't like the West Gulf Coast. She was looking for something. So one day I come by here in 95, and I saw the 16-mile limit to or mileage marker to Fernandina. So the dog and I come over, and we had lunch at the main beach. And the next time I come down, I come back and took another look and cut off on Ash Street to beat the light at Center Street. And I found that tree in the middle of the road, and I said, June would like this.
Yeah.
So we still started there. Coming down here and looking for a house, and we finally found a few.
Great. So you moved here. You moved to Amelia Island. You moved to North 4th Street?
No. Highland Drive
first. Okay.
We did a couple of years on Highland Drive. Then we did a couple of years on Sunrise, and then we did a couple of years on Fiddler, and then we did a couple of years on South 10th Street.
Wow.
And we finally wound up anchored, I think, behind the post office.
That's great. Yeah, downtown historic area. Yeah. What do you do for fun? Do you fish or golf or?
No. Just play with houses.
Just play with houses. Houses are your hobby.
When she had four or five houses at a time, you didn't have much time for golf.
Gotcha. I just want to ask before we conclude, have you gone back to Hawaii, Pearl Harbor at all?
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
We come through Pearl on a couple of trips that we made to the Orient.
Mm-hmm.
June has taken me further afield than the Navy ever did.
Mm-hmm.
When we worked for the Arsenal in the last 18 years, we traveled maybe twice each year with a Regal Cultural Society was the name of the travel club we belonged to.
Mm-hmm.
And whenever they'd have a trip, they'd say, get your passport ready and you're moving, we're going here, there, or elsewhere. And we went from Addis Ababa to Tokyo.
Well, that's a great hobby.
Tibet.
Yeah.
Travel, sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
Good for you.
Yeah. About almost around the world.
Good. When you go back through Hawaii, do you have any thoughts or recollections about Pearl Harbor and all that at the time?
I can still get the aroma.
Yeah, I was wondering if that stuck with you. Yeah.
I had a guy in Picatinny. We were destroying hand grenades, pull a pin and drop them over the wall into a garbage can.
Mm.
And he held one too long.
Oh.
And as soon as I smelt that burning flesh, it all comes back.
Gosh, that's horrible. I'm sure you've seen the way Hollywood, the movies, show Pearl Harbor and the attack.
I've probably got more literature on Pearl than this museum has.
Does Hollywood do a good job to reenact what actually took place, do you think?
Pardon me?
Does Hollywood, when they make their movies and things and they show Pearl Harbor, do they do a good job of reflecting what actually went on that day?
My limit of what I've seen was very limited because I was in a steel box with nothing but slits for portholes. And you had the telephone on and you was talking to people on the gun and people down in the plotting room. And they didn't know anything more than you did. You seen nothing.
Sure. Before we conclude, is there anything else that you'd like to add that maybe I didn't ask? Is there something you'd like to bring up or talk about?
No, I think we pretty well covered it.
Dick, you've done an excellent job. On behalf of the Library of Congress and the museum, we thank you. Thank you both so much for coming in here, June. Thank you. And this concludes the interview. So thanks so much.